You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. When President Trump declared the opioid crisis a public health emergency last fall, he offered some ideas for tackling the emergency, although no specific plans nor funding to implement the ideas. One of those ideas he talked about is telemedicine. And my next guest believes telemedicine could be especially helpful where America's opioid crisis is at its worst, rural areas. Jamie Lister is an assistant professor of social work at Wayne State University. Jamie, welcome.
Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Let us get everybody on the same page. Exactly what is telemedicine?
Telemedicine, I think, is kind of a broad term that reflects the ability to, you know, bring patients in using video conferencing. You might use Skype or different kind of web-based platforms so that a physician or that other healthcare providers can connect with a patient that might live in rural or remote areas away from the clinic or the hospital setting.
So apart from opioid addiction, which we're going to dig into in a moment, what are some other health problems that lend themselves to telemedicine as an approach?
Yeah, you know, it really could kind of run across the spectrum. I mean, you could use telemedicine to connect with cardiologists in remote areas. You can use telemedicine to do psychological kind of consults. They'll call it telepsych. You know, there really isn't any condition that you couldn't potentially apply it to. There may be some limitations, but I know a colleague that connects with forensic settings or with, prison populations, and they'll do consults using telemedicine to kind of do assessments or to work with the patients on monitoring their pain. So it can kind of stretch to most health problems.
Looking at this national issue of opioid addiction, why is this crisis at its worst in rural areas?
You know, I think that rural areas, what they're really struggling with is access to treatment. So, you know, in urban areas, suburban areas, and rural areas, all of them have had problems with rising rates of opioid abuse and overdose and other complications.
So the incidence is pretty much the same everywhere,
it's similar. Now, rural has jumped more. So in the past kind of 10 to 15 years, the rise in rural communities is stronger than in the other communities. I think part of it could be that overprescription of opioid medications for pain is one of the major complications. And it's a similar issue that gets in the way for rural populations there, is that to provide non-pharmacological treatment in rural areas for pain is a struggle. So it's a bit more of a, we'll try these prescription opioids to help you manage the pain.
So you're not driving to physical therapy every day.
Right. And so it's helpful in the short term. The problem is that more people got started on those medications, developed dependence on those medications, and then developed problematic usage and sometimes transitioned to heroin. So I think that the rural area has that problem kind of uniquely a bit more than the urban suburban areas.
What are the big hurdles that folks in rural areas face when they want to access health care? I mean, I guess I'm asking, what's there besides that obvious one of distance?
Well, I do think that, you know, like you mentioned, the distance is big, and mainly it's big because of the transportation problems. So in terms of the time, reliable access to their own personal car, you're not going to have bus routes that are going to connect you into the clinic. So you're going to need your own transport, which would require you a lot of time. So if you're working, that's a complication. Or if you just have other in-home responsibilities, that's a challenge. But beyond that, I think a lot of people in the rural community that might have low or working class levels of income are going to have even greater financial constraints. Even if they could set aside the time, the amount of money it takes, gas, and to keep the upkeep on their own personal vehicle is a problem. Beyond that, I think that privacy concerns are pretty big in the rural community, where, you know, if you are traveling to go to a clinic for a healthcare problem, and specifically a substance use problem, and it's a small community, it's possible that more people kind of are able to talk about that problem, to know that you have it. And so those concerns are maybe a bit greater than in an urban or suburban setting, where if you can get to a doctor, it might be situated in a community kind of center where it's not really clear where exactly you're going.
I've actually heard that talked about in terms of homelessness in rural areas, that it's that kind of a sense of people knowing other people's business and you really want to hide it. You really want to keep it off the radar screen.
Yeah, I think that that's a really big part of it in the rural setting. So it makes it complicated because One, you're going to have a limitation that you can't necessarily situate, say, a substance abuse specialty clinic in a small rural town because there's not enough people in each individual town. But beyond that, even if you were able to do that, if, say, you had that clinic in the town, potentially anybody who parks their car there on a regular basis, people start to talk and say, you know, I think so-and-so has a substance use problem, which even though it is an addiction and a disease, as most of us know in the kind of addiction science research, that view hasn't necessarily trickled down to the community where people view it without stigma.
Stigma. So that brings us to telemedicine. Why is it you believe telemedicine could be an effective weapon in this war on opioid addiction, particularly in these rural areas?
I think that there's two things it could really do. I think first off, it can get more people started in treatment. So potentially if somebody in a rural area can make it to their clinic setting one time and get their initial intakes done at their healthcare setting, thereafter, it might afford the ability for them to do future visits more commonly via telemedicine, kind of reducing that burden of having to travel. And it may also kind of reduce that stigma because if people are able to do some of those doctor visits from home, then they're not potentially being seen or having to travel into the clinics. And we do know that there is a preference among many people with substance use problems to go to non-specialty centers, to go to family medicine doctors, to go to primary care, kind of go to their general practitioner. So I think that the telemedicine potentially tackles some of that stigma and shame because people are able to see that doc, even if they are a specialist, without being in a specialty setting.
And again, back to, as you talked about, the cost of travel, and so that eliminates all of that problem. Have we seen this working where you could measure success in people sticking with their rehabilitation program by using telemedicine?
You know, there's some promising results out of Ontario. So there was a group that used telemedicine to do treatment for opioid problems. And now that it wasn't a randomized trial where you could control for all the differences, but they kind of let people select into how often they would go to sessions in person versus by telehealth. And the group that had a greater percentage of their sessions via telemedicine actually stayed in treatment longer. So they, you know, did better. In that study, the more you use telemedicine, the better it was in terms of your ability to not have an early dropout of treatment.
What kind of government funding and government action do you think that we need to see in order to make this happen, for telemedicine to become a viable tool to save lives?
You know, I think that when the administration announced a public health emergency, there was some discussion that might allow for policy changes so that some of the regulations around telemedicine, so for example, in most jurisdictions, patients have to go into the doctor for the first time and be seen in person. So some discussion that maybe there could be flexibility around that rule, which would make it easier for places that already have telemedicine to use it to enroll more patients and use it more commonly. So I think potentially making policy action might allow the groups that already have telemedicine capabilities to function more efficiently. In terms of funding, you know, I think that allowing as many people to access treatment through public funds is really important because that's a known predictor of having opioid use vulnerability, is to be somebody at a working class or low income level, oftentimes without public insurance. And sometimes the regulations around telemedicine kind of depend on which type of insurance you have. So potentially more flexibility there too, so that if you are on Medicaid or you're on block grant funding versus private insurance, that you could still access telemedicine. So I guess it would be a little bit less of an emphasis on the new monies, but more around policy regulations so that it allows people to better access telemedicine if that's a desirable option.
And what about universities just like yours, like Wayne State? How can they help delivering health care to rural residents?
Well, you know, there's actually a group in Wayne State Psychiatry, some of the colleagues of mine, who have just received funding from the Flynn Foundation to look at rolling out telemedicine across the state. So they're just getting rolling, and I think their goal being to try to understand some of the barriers and some of these policy regulations so that they can better implement telemedicine in needed areas. I think we still need more research on how well telemedicine works. Are there differences in community level, you know, urban versus rural? Are there any other predictors of who prefers telemedicine as opposed to kind of a one-size-fits-all that if we just roll this out, it'll work efficiently for everyone? There may be some people who have a strong preference for in-person sessions. And so even if you rolled out telemedicine for them, it may not work. On the other hand, there may be a group of people that really would prefer telemedicine. So I think some of that kind of foundational research is still needed so that when we do apply more funding to try to roll this out, that we do it effectively.
This really speaks to the narrative that has changed over the decades, hasn't it, in terms of opioid addiction, because it wasn't long ago when it was criminalized and America's waging a war on drugs. So we're going to lock you up.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And you know, a lot of the patients, for example, in our Detroit-based clinic have had opioid or heroin use problems for roughly 30 years. So they were initially using in a time period that didn't treat opioids as a crisis, but more so as some type of moral failing or a bad choice. And I think now we're seeing this shift, which is positive on a societal level. But I think a lot of our individuals still struggling went through a very different experience before that wasn't a helpful experience. And I think it's something we should be mindful of as we talk about the opioid crisis today.
How long do you think it'll take for this to be a commonly accepted method of treatment?
You know, I think it's rapidly changing. So it's hard to put a timetable on when it will be at kind of a fully accepted, commonly utilized practice. But I do think that, you know, I spoke with a methadone clinic. So that's an opioid specialty clinic in Gaylord. And they use telemedicine with one of their physicians. I believe that the physician is situated somewhere in kind of mid-Michigan, Lansing, Mount Pleasant area. So they're using it now. But they still have to work around some of those regulations with the person coming into the clinic. But I think that there are more and more people trying to kind of get onto that. Now, the bigger issue might be that even in northern Michigan, so in the Upper Peninsula, there's only roughly a dozen physicians waivered to provide this type of treatment. So, you know, I think that's one of the bigger barriers is how do we just get more doctors and physicians doing Suboxone, buprenorphine, methadone treatment, because until we have enough supply of physicians, no matter if we have more efficient or effective options to intervene, we need the personnel and the staffing to actually do it. So I think that's one of the bigger limitations that still exists.
Well, you're spelling out kind of a to-do list for the future. And if you find yourself wanting to learn more about this topic, you can go to theconversation.com. Jamie Lister's story, The Opioid Crisis is at its worst in rural areas. Can telemedicine help? It's at theconversation.com. Jamie Lister, Assistant Professor of Social Work at Wayne State University. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It was great to be here. And I hope that this information helps people in need of treatment with opioid problems.